Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Listen to KMOX anytime, anywhere. Download the radio.com app today.
I have a confession. I'm addicted to the news.
You know I'm totally off script right now.
Journalism is cool again, and you have endless content, let's be honest.
And this is how I got elected, by being off script.
Now, Mark Reardon.
I've seen people almost go to the bathroom in their pants in his presence.
On St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
And it was all like compacted ice and chunky, like driving down a dirt road.
I just like that guy. I heard him this morning during one of the CBS news updates, and they used that cut to open CBS this morning as well. Let's hear that again, just because I like the sound I hear.
It was all like compacted ice and chunky, like driving down a dirt road.
That's the international sound for driving down a dirt road, ladies and gentlemen. And yeah, we don't have that snow to deal with here in St. Louis, and I'm fine with that. Obviously, a nice sunny but chilly Monday as we get into the period between Thanksgiving and Christmas, and everyone will say how quickly it goes by, because it has. I can't believe we're in December right now. It really is kind of mind-blowing. I talked to a bunch of other people here in the building and in friends, and I think everyone is relating the same thing. I don't know what it is about this year, and maybe some of you think it's the slowest year ever, but it does seem like it's going by very quickly. I have a ton of stuff to get through today, a ton of stuff, and some of it I think is relatively important. And the one thing I want to guide you into is our conversation at 2:30 this afternoon on climate change. I found a piece. I was absolutely blown away by this because I was poking around over the weekend, and there's a guy by the name of Michael Schellenberger who wrote, and he's an expert on the environment and energy, and he wrote a piece that I've never read a piece on climate change like this, because it actually tried to put things into terms that people could understand, and it did not try to scare the heck out of them. You know, and this is what happens with Greta Thunberg and others. We're hearing it from John Kerry and the UN today. The climate may be changing. The climate may be warming. Now, this guy, who I'm going to share his piece with you here, he's a hero of the environment from Time magazine. He has won something called the Green Book Award. He's written for the New York Times, Washington Post. He believes in man-made climate change. He thinks that we are the driving force causing it. But he also thinks that there's a lot of danger in the hysterics of Greta Thunberg and others. And he will tell you, and look, I can tell you these things, and I have for years, with the help of Dr. Roy Spencer and other folks, where this nonsense that climate change is causing more tornadoes or more intense hurricanes or the wildfires, all this stuff is absolutely debunked. And by the way, it's debunked by this guy. So this is going to be one of those handy-dandy pieces that I'm going to refer to all the nut jobs out there that either email or call my voicemail, or even some of them who must be over the age of 85 or 90, send snail mail about this stuff, because they think that the planet is coming to an end. You need to relax. You need to understand there are things that we can do, and there are things that we should do to protect the planet, but the hysteria has to stop. And I think that the impetus for this guy and his column, Schellenberger, with a bunch of his colleagues, was to say, we're losing people on this, because when you start talk about how life on the earth is dying and billions are going to die and all these, you know, this so-called news outlet Vice that claimed that the collapse of civilization may have already begun, AOC, all this nonsense out there. It's frightening, it's scary, and it's wrong. And this guy, Michael Schellenberger, finally had the guts to say it. Now, I tweeted this out over the weekend, and I said, oh, you better be careful. They're going to come after you, AOC. The people on your side will come after you. I promise you. So that's coming up here a little bit. We got some good news. This is like Christmas come early from MoDOT. My producer, Dave Klein, sent this to me because we travel on 44 east and westbound when we come in to work. And I did have one of the spokespeople from MoDOT on a few weeks ago, and she did say this. And in fact, I think it's going to happen. If you do drive on I-44 between downtown and I guess I would say Kings Highway or beyond, crews, this is according to MoDOT, the Facebook page, crews will move three lanes of westbound I-44 between Grand and Kings Highway back to their original lanes starting at 7 a.m. Wednesday. Work should be complete by 2:30 p.m. In addition, the Vandeventer ramp to westbound I-44 should reopen by 2:30 p.m. The left lane in both directions of I-44 will stay closed until they get the barrier fixed, but that's good news. And then, of course, they're going to all do it again next summer with different bridges and shut it down. Wasn't that the case, Dave? Didn't we hear that from them? Yeah. I mean, don't get too excited because whatever happens, they'll mess it up again. So I did want to share that. Something I didn't get to last week. Oh, and by the way, I totally want to talk about the Richard Jewell movie. I watched that on Wednesday night. It is amazing. The president's going to have a field day with this. And I think people are going to be really interested in just the subject matter overall. Clint Eastwood did a great job with it. But there are things that apply to that when it comes to fake news and the environment and climate change that I sort of want to relate. Because this is a damning indictment of not only the media, but government. And just talking about it will give, here's what I thought of when I saw the movie. It will give Trump a lot of ammo to run and say, look, how can you claim that when I refer to fake news, it isn't fake news. Look what happened to Richard Jewell. Look what happened to Brett Kavanaugh. Look what happened to the Covington Catholic kids. I would say, look what happens when we talk about climate change. There is an unwillingness on the part of the media, the mainstream media, the folks at the New York Times, the Washington Post, ABC, CNN, CBS, the Post-Dispatch, to put facts into context on important stories like the environment. And that's sort of the point of Schellenberger's piece that I'll share with you a little bit later this afternoon. There was one thing that I have to do just as we get started here because I forgot to do it last week. If you watch, I see this on football, so I don't know if this is an ad that's running on a variety of shows, but if you watch a fair amount of college or NFL football, you'll see this ad for something called Peloton. It's a stationary bike. Dave, you've seen this thing, haven't you? Fred, have you seen it? Have you seen the Peloton ad? So this is what the audio sounds like, all right? Just to give you an idea here.
Okay, you ready?
Yes.
Now.
A Peloton? Give it up for our first time riding.
All right, so the husband welcomes his wife on, is it Christmas? Or because they're trying to inspire people to do this Christmas. So it's Christmas morning. She walks in. Here's what you need to know. She's about 5'2", weighs about 105, right? She's super skinny and hot. So her husband decides, because she needs some sort of transformation in her life, it's not going well enough being super hot, 5'2", 105 pounds, she needs to get a stationary bike so she can feel better about herself and her life and her outlook and, I'm guessing, her family. So he surprises her because she's so out of shape.
Okay, you ready?
Yes.
Now.
A Peloton? Give it up for our first time riding.
All right, first ride.
All right, first ride.
Excited.
She can barely do it because she's so fat and overweight. Her, you know, her flabbiness is just overflowing over the handlebars, and she can't even barely get the pedals moving.
Let's do this. 5 days in a row. You surprised?
I am. 6 a.m. Yay.
Rising with the sun.
That was totally worth it.
Let's go, Grace in Boston. 50 rides.
She just said my name. A year ago, I didn't realize how much this would change me.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
This holiday, give the gift of Peloton.
So that is, it's confounded me, I think, is the word that I would use, because I don't exactly know how she changed. She was super hot and skinny before she got the Peloton. She's super hot and skinny after the Peloton. Now, look, I've done enough semi-difficult athletic training in my life to understand there's more to it than just how you look or whether you're supposed to lose weight. You want to get in shape. You want to challenge yourself. You want to do, I've done multiple centuries on a bike, and then I decided that was really stupid. Let's play golf and lose golf balls. So that's what I do now. But this commercial just cracks me up. And I have seen, I thought I was the only one. So I sent this audio to Dave, I said like a week ago, and he responds. He goes, why'd you send me audio of the Peloton commercial? I said, bear with me here. We're going to talk about this. And I had it on my list every day last week. And then I started seeing some tweets about it again today, because I don't think I'm the only one that's mocking it. But if you want one of those Peloton bikes, they look pretty cool. If you're, you know, under 110 and super hot, it's going to transform your life.
Mark Reardon now.
No, never. Yes, always.
Total Information PM at 4 on KMOX.
This is really a good piece from Mr. Schellenberg, that, you know, the topic of climate change that I'm going to get to in the next segment. And it's one of those things, you know, sometimes I'll see a piece that I really like and we'll try to book the person who wrote it. I think it's going to be odd, but I'm going to share much of what he wrote just because I want to illustrate the points and put some of these things into perspective, all the nonsense that you hear, the hysteria. Now, he's not saying that we don't have challenges, and I've never said we don't have challenges. I've always advocated adaptation as opposed to hysteria. So that's coming up here at the bottom of the hour. Also, I think a real fascinating guest for the start of the 3 o'clock hour this afternoon, Delta Force Special Ops, author of All Secure, Delta Force Operators Fight to Survive on the Battlefield and the Home Front. This is a local person named Tom Slattery, who is a command sergeant major retired of Sunset Hills, wrote a book about his experience. He was involved with Black Hawk Down and that whole episode and a lot more beyond that. So that's coming up here in a little bit as well on this Monday afternoon. You may or may not have seen, we covered this a little bit, and it was in our local paper, two efforts by Republicans, or at least one of them, to repeal and replace the new redistricting system that everybody voted on when it was called Clean Missouri Amendment 1 a couple of years ago. State Representative Dean Plocker of DePere is trying to make some changes here on several fronts, thinking that there, and we talked about this plenty when we were leading up to that election, that there were things in this Clean Missouri bill that were somewhat questionable, and I know that it was popular, but State Representative Plocker is with me this afternoon to talk a little bit about what maybe the next steps will be. Dean, how are you?
Good, good. Glad to be on today.
Getting a little attention on this. I think that I remember when we, you know, I did quite a few shows in the aftermath, well, certainly before Amendment 1, or in the aftermath of that, and many of my panelists on the Reardon Roundtable, as you may or may not know, did not take kindly to some of the aspects of this. It was very popular with voters. It passed by 62%. And one thing I think that's important here before you and I get going is you're making it clear that you're not trying to do something without sending it back to the people for a vote, correct?
Well, that's correct. I'm not trying to unilaterally decide for the voters what would be best. I'm trying to offer the voters a choice that they didn't have the last time around. And I'm hoping, too, that the voters would understand that what they voted on the last time was a comprehensive piece of material that altered the Constitution that I think went far above and beyond what they thought they might have been voting on. They were sold a piece of legislation, if you will, or constitutional revision that was centered around the whole sale of what was titled clean, when in fact it's not clean. It makes everything ambiguous. And they were sold a product that was simply told to be a gift ban. And it's more than just a gift ban. I think it goes beyond what they were sold.
Yeah, and, you know, again, going back to that period, I remember a lot of guests, and I was, you know, basically trying to warn people about that. But it was what it was. And I think once you had the ballot language, people were going to say yes to that because it sounded like you were cleaning up government. So it was on its way to overwhelming approval. And certainly that happened. But when it comes to the aspects that you want to change specifically, are you focusing on the redistricting or other things that passed in that amendment?
Well, I think there's, you know, several ways that you can approach this. And I think this is what has to be decided. And I think the voters, you know, should be aware of both. I think it's important to have a gift ban. I think that's an important product that the voters voted on, and that's what they want. But with Clean Missouri, it was very disingenuous what was advertised. They were told it was a gift ban, but it's not a gift ban. The gift still exists. I don't think you need to be accepting gifts. I myself have never accepted a lobbyist gift. And so what I had proposed was something that would go back to the voters that would truly be a true gift ban. It would prohibit any gift giving of any nature.
So this is where I think people might be confused, because the amendment that everyone voted on and that passed included a limit lobbying gifts to $5. And you're saying that has not happened, or they get around it, or what's the deal?
Well, they sold it as a gift band, but it's not a gift band if you can still receive gifts. And today you can still receive gifts up to $5 a day. And I guess how you interpret what $5 is, why $5 a day, why leave that ambiguity out there? Why not just make it a real gift band, which is what it purportedly did to begin with anyway? So I think, you know, sell a product for what it is. I don't think we need to be receiving gifts. I haven't received gifts. Gifts aren't going to sway my vote anyway. But if you're going to sell something that says it's a gift band, make it a sincere gift band. That wasn't sincere what Clean Missouri did.
All right.
It was very disingenuous.
And on the topic of redistricting, because I think that's one of the things that concern people the most going in.
Well, I think it now concerns people because there's a buyer's remorse. I don't think going into the voting booth when they voted for Clean Missouri, when they wanted to vote for a gift ban, when it was not really a gift ban, they were not aware as well as perhaps they, I think what now they're more and more becoming aware of is the redistricting component. And Clean Missouri recategorized the levels of importance on how you redistrict something. And it put competitive, I believe, at the top or close there too. Competitive, though, may be important. I don't think it's the most important. I would argue that I think communities would rather be kept together. I think keeping communities together, areas of similar interest together, is more important. And so what I proposed last year was putting communities back at the top and not putting competitive at the top that Clean Missouri did.
How would you do that and define it in another amendment?
You know, I'd have to go back and read what I filed. You do it by, you try to keep what we do is we try to keep things as compact and contiguous as possible. Now, granted, you're never going to have the perfect square or the perfect circle, but you do try to keep communities together, the school districts, the boundaries, mountains, rivers, whatever they could be. You try to keep people within the same relative area without having too many areas snaking off into weird directions. And it's never going to be perfect. Somebody has to decide how this works out, which was another component that I thought Clean Missouri did not adequately describe when they want to say there's a nonpartisan demographer. That couldn't be further from the truth when the demographer is decided solely by an individual that is elected. So the plan that was in place prior to this Clean Missouri went to a group of people that was bipartisan and where 70% had to agree on something. So I think you had more input on what communities were at that point too, rather than a hired gun demographer that's appointed by a partisan election.
You know, if they haven't done so already, you know, Dean, that the editorial board of the Post-Dispatch will editorialize. I think they did it at the time when you introduced this. So here we go. Republicans are trying to overturn the will of the people again. So how would you respond? So I guess the question is, so how would you respond to that?
Well, in order to do what I propose, I simply take it to the voters. So the voters will decide what most of them. I'm sorry, Mark, are you there? I think I may have lost you.
Yeah, no, I think you might have clicked into Bluetooth or something like that. Yeah, no, clearly the voters would have a say again, but I'm guessing they're going to take a stand and say, look, the voters already decided on this issue, and you, as a Republican, you don't want this to happen because it favors, at least at this time, it favors the Democrats because Nicole Galloway is the one that's sort of appointing this these people.
Well, you know, the voters did have a decision to make, and they clearly made that. And I think they voted on the fact that they don't like their legislators receiving gifts. And I don't know if the entire package was explained to them. They were told that they had to take the package as a whole. And I don't know if that's the best path here. I think the voters should be able to break down what is most important and vote on a individual basis, perhaps. Maybe just the community issue, maybe the gift ban as it is, but not wrap everything up into one big package, put a pretty bow on it. Everyone buys the package because of the pretty bow, but they haven't opened up the package to see what's inside it. And I think the voting public needs to have a say in how their communities are sticking together when it comes to redistricting.
Do you think you have support to make this effort a priority in the session?
Well, I clearly have the support in the House. We've done it 2 years now, and the House is overwhelmingly voted in favor of it. You know, it's up to the Senate. As I think people know, the Senate operates a little bit differently. And so the question will be what is the Senate willing to stomach when it comes to this issue?
State Rep. Dean Plocker, great to have you on. I appreciate the explanation here this afternoon.
Well, Mark, it's hard to explain as there's so many issues involved here, but I think the voters need to have a choice, and I appreciate you giving me a call here and being on today.
I think that you've kind of summed up the problem from the beginning, because it was, and this is why I'm not a big fan of this constitutional amendment process, because I think you do have everything that's jumbled, and you can find the common ground language that's going to say to the voter when they walk in there, I'm not saying they're uninformed, but the language is very favorable to say, yeah, we want to stop this from happening, and it's very complicated. So I don't know how, in this particular case, even sending something back to the voters, I can see the competing ad campaigns going back and forth being very confusing to the electorate.
Well, I think the initiative petition process, particularly for constitutional changes, is, as you just outlined, a difficult process and perhaps a little bit too easy. And that opens up a whole other can of worms. But, you know, when you have more than one single subject coming to the voter, you have outcomes that, you know, where the voter is asked to take up a lot of issues. They vote on the prettiest issue that has been sold to them without maybe having the entire box explained what's in it. Well, explain what's inside the box when they vote on that.
So that's what happens.
You've touched on an important issue with the constitutional initiative petition.
All right, Dean, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Hey, happy holidays. Thank you, Mark.
State Rep. Dean Plocker of DePere with us this afternoon. Carol's coming in to do the news.
News Radio 1120 KMOX. The voice of the Cardinals.
So I think what I'm about to do here is really, really important. And I hope that those of you who are hysterical about climate change will hear not me out, but Michael Schellenberger out. I hope that those of you who have friends who think you're crazy for not thinking that the world is going to end in 12 years, that you share this piece with him. And, you know, this is timely because here you have, again, a situation where the UN chief is saying this. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said this.
Do we really want to be remembered as the generation that buried its head in the sand, that fiddled while the planet burned? The other option is the path of hope, a path of resolve, of sustainable solutions.
John Kerry.
We've got to treat this like a war. I mean, it has to require decision-making and organization and efforts that are just not taking place.
I posted this on Twitter over the weekend. It's probably the best column I've seen, certainly recently, about climate change and the hysteria. Now, we have Dr. Roy Spencer on a regular basis to try to put these things into perspective. Because he's a scientist. He used to work at NASA. He's got street cred, even though people want to deny it. You have Anthony Lupo at the University of Missouri. There's a large, large scientific community that either does not believe or is not convinced that we are the major driving force behind climate change. But there's a whole lot, I'd like to think, and I'm going to hold on to hope, especially after this piece, that there are a lot more people out there that would say, yeah, you know, we think that we're the driving force. We're causing these problems. We need to do something about it. But hey, let's dial down some of the nuttiness. So Schellenberger, who is a person who believes in man-made global warming, he is a Time Magazine hero of the environment. He's a Green Book Award winner. He writes for the New York Times, Washington Post. But I got to tell you something. I think he's waded into dangerous territory here because his side will not like this at all. So he says this. Environmental journalists and advocates have in recent weeks made a number of apocalyptic predictions about the impact of climate change. Bill McKibben suggested climate-driven fires in Australia had made koalas functionally extinct. It's not true, by the way. We'll get into that. Extinction Rebellion said billions will die and life on Earth is dying. Vice claimed the collapse of civilization may have already begun. Few have underscored the threat more than student climate activist Greta Thunberg and the Green New Deal sponsor, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. The latter said the world is going to end in 12 years if we don't address climate change. Now, I want you to, as I'm reading you and sharing you this information, I mentioned that I saw the Richard Jewell movie from Clint Eastwood, which is about the Centennial Park explosion, the bombing, the pipe bomb that went off during the Olympics in the early 90s. And it's a major indictment of the media, the way that they handled this whole story. And it certainly applies today because I'm going to share with you a bunch of facts that you will not believe. And it's from a guy who believes in climate change, okay? Not my facts. This guy believes that we're causing it. But you'll never see a reference in the Post-Dispatch, in the New York Times, in the Washington Post, when they write a story about climate change. I could look at this story right here, and I have it from the Post-Dispatch. Headline, UN chief warns a point of no return on climate change. There is nothing in here, not one line that says that this is absolute nonsense. And that would be my summation of it. So let's say they're not going to put that quote in there. This is absolute nonsense. Let's include some of these details from Mr. Schellenberger. All right. And he says, look, sometimes scientists themselves make apocalyptic claims. It's difficult to see how we could accommodate a billion people or even half of that if Earth warms 4 degrees, said one earlier this year. The potential for multi-bread basket failure is increasing, said another. If sea levels rise as much as the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change predicts, another scientist said, it will be an unmanageable problem. Apocalyptic, Schellenberger writes, that has real-world impacts. So in September, a group of British psychologists said that children are increasingly suffering from anxiety from the frightening discourse around climate change. In October, an activist with XR, Extinction Rebellion, an environmental group founded in 2018 to commit civil disobedience to draw awareness to the threat its founders and supporters say climate change poses, and a videographer were kicked and beaten in a London tube station by angry commuters. And at last week, an XR co-founder said a genocide like the Holocaust was happening again on a far greater scale and in plain sight from climate change. Think about that. They're bringing the Holocaust into this. So Mr. Schellenberger says, look, climate change is an issue that I care passionately about. I've dedicated a significant portion of my life to addressing it. He says, I've been politically active on the issue for 20 years. I've researched it. I've written about it. He's got a group called Environmental Progress that's worked with the leading climate scientists to prevent carbon emissions from rising. And he says, so far, we've helped prevent emissions from increasing the equivalent of adding 24 million cars to the road. But this is where it gets tricky, and this is where the climate change alarmists and those who buy into the hysteria will not like Mr. Schellenberger, because he wants to use facts, and they won't like that at all. He says, I also care about getting the facts and the science right, and in recent months corrected inaccurate and apocalyptic news media coverage of the fires in the Amazon and the fires in California, both of which have been improperly presented as resulting primarily from climate change. This is where the journalism becomes important. Young reporters who have agenda-driven journalism is the only thing we have these days. And you're not going to see an opposing view. So he says, journalists and activists have an obligation to describe environmental problems honestly and accurately, even if they fear doing so will reduce their news value or salience with the public. There is good evidence that the catastrophic framing of climate change is self-defeating, and because it alienates and polarizes many people. And exaggerating climate change risks distracting us from other important issues, including ones we might have more near-term control over. He says, I feel to say this up front because I want the issues I'm about to raise to be taken seriously and not dismissed by those who label as climate deniers or climate delayers anyone who pushes back against exaggeration. Now, I've been one who for 30 years has pushed back on the exaggeration. And I think most people who have an ounce of common sense realize that the exaggeration is nuttiness. But there are a large swath of people, they're called Democrats, who feel that this stuff is real. So here's what he says. First, no credible scientific body has ever said climate change threatens the collapse of civilization, much less the extinction of the human species. Our children are going to die in the next 10 to 20 years. That's the quote. What's the scientific basis for those claims? That was somebody from that group XR, and there was a reporter that actually asked that question. These claims have been disputed, admittedly, she said. There are some scientists who are agreeing and some who are saying it's not true, but the overall issue is that these deaths are going to happen. So the interviewer said, but most scientists don't agree with this. I look through the IPCC reports and see no reference to billions of people going to die or children in 20 years. How would they die? Mass migration around the world already taking place due to prolonged drought in countries, particularly in South Asia. There are wildfires in Indonesia, the Amazon rainforest, Siberia, the Arctic, she said. But in saying so, the XR spokesperson had grossly misrepresented the science. There's a shocker. There is robust evidence of disasters displacing people worldwide, notes IPCC, but limited evidence, and this is the group leading the whole charge on this, limited evidence that climate change or sea level rise is the direct cause. What about mass migration? Well, the majority of resultant population movements tend to occur within the borders of affected countries. It's not like climate doesn't matter. It's that climate change is outweighed by other factors. Earlier this year, researchers found that climate has affected organized armed conflict within countries. However, other drivers such as low socioeconomic development and low capabilities of the state are judged to be substantially more influential. Last January, after climate scientists criticized AOC for saying the world would end in 12 years, her person said, her spokesperson said, we can quibble about the phraseology, whether it's existential or cataclysmic, but we're seeing lots of climate change related problems that are already impacting lives. So Schellenberger says that last part may be true, but it's also true that economic development has made us less vulnerable, which is why there was a 90, this is important, these are big numbers here, a 99.7% decline in the death toll from natural disasters since its peak in 1931. I'm going to give you something kind of handy dandy. You can put this in your iPhone, in your notes. When some nutbag out there tells you that the planet is going to go away and we're facing extinction, and that part of the reason is because of natural disasters. In 1931, 3.7 million people died from natural disasters. In 2018, 11,000. And that decline occurred over a period when global population quadrupled. So these numbers get better, and I have more of them. We'll get to them here in just a second.
St. Louis's weather station, KMOX.
All right, I want to get back to this piece by Michael Schellenberger. Now, I put this up on Twitter over the weekend, and my recommendation for those of you who have common sense on climate change, you're worried about the effects, you're what I would describe myself as a lukewarmer, as does Dr. Roy Spencer. Look, we think that we know the climate's changing, and we're probably contributing to a portion of it. But then the question is, what can we do about it? Will there be death and destruction and, you know, extinction? Well, there will not be. And I can say it, and I have said it for decades, but it doesn't matter. I have no heft because I'm just a stupid talk show host, right? Well, Michael Schellenberger is not. He is a scientist. He's someone who's written about this for a long time. He's been, you know, honored by Time Magazine. He's written books about this. And by the way, he's gotten a lot of other colleagues that have signed on to this opinion of his, which basically says apocalyptic claims about climate change are dead wrong. So I offered this example before the break. In 1931, 3.7 million people died from natural disasters. In 2018, just 11,000 did. You know, I've put this into context with tornadoes and even the fires. The fires are killing more people and destroying houses because you have houses and people in areas that never used to exist. Same thing with Midwestern tornadoes. We used to joke 30, 40 years ago, they'd always hit, you know, just a mobile home park. Well, now you have big developments in those areas that we never used to. And by the way, Schellenberger points this out in this piece. I'm going to try to zip through as much more as I can. Here's something interesting. Do you think sea levels, you know, the IPCC estimates that sea levels could rise 2 feet by 2100. Does that sound apocalyptic or unmanageable? Well, to Al Gore and to John Kerry, I guess it does. But here's something you probably didn't know because I didn't know it. 1/3 of the Netherlands is below sea level. Some areas are 7 meters below sea level. You might think that the Netherlands are rich, they can do this, Bangladesh is poor, but the Netherlands adapted to living below sea level 400 years ago, and guess what? Technology is a little better than 400 years ago. This is called adaptation. All right, I'm going to editorialize here. I've been talking about adaptation for a long time. We're wasting our breath trying to kill, you know, cars and get rid of cars and all this nonsense that John Kerry and the left and AOC and Elizabeth Warren, it's a waste of time. You want to talk about solutions? Let's talk about them. Let's use technology, right? What about the claims of crop failure, famine, mass death? That's science fiction, not science. This guy believes in climate change, that we're doing it. We're causing it. He says that is science fiction. Humans today produce enough food for 10 billion people, 25% more than we need. And scientific bodies predict increases in that share, not declines. Nobody is suggesting climate change won't negatively affect crop yields, he says. It could, but such declines should be put in perspective. Wheat yields have increased 100 to 300% around the world in the last 50 years. A study of 30 models found that yields would decline by 6% for every 1 degree Celsius increase, just 6%. But he points out, appropriately so, in another line that you will never see in the New York Times or the Post-Dispatch or the Associated Press, rates of future yield growth depend far more on whether poor nations get access to tractors, irrigation, and fertilizer than on climate change. Think about those poor nations that don't have access to that right now. You want to make sure, if you are Greta Thunberg and some other climate change nut, you want to make sure that those poor nations never get access to tractors, irrigation, and fertilizer. You don't want them to thrive or survive. That's nuts. That's craziness when you think about it. Because these things are hurting poor people around the world far more than whatever might happen with a degree or two difference in the next 100 years or 200 years. Now, he says this, Schellenberger. He says, look, I work on climate change because I worry about the impact it could have on endangered species. Climate change may threaten 1 million species globally and half of all mammals, reptiles, and amphibians in diverse places like Central Africa, where the endangered mountain gorilla is. But it's not the case that we're putting our own survival in danger through extinctions, as Elizabeth Colbert claimed in her book, Sixth Extinction. As tragic as animal extinctions are, Schellenberger writes, they do not threaten human civilization. If we want to save endangered species, we need to do so because we care about wildlife for spiritual, ethical, or aesthetic reasons. And exaggerating the risk and suggesting that climate change is more important than things like habitat destruction are counterproductive. Then he gets to the things about the koalas being extinct. Not true. And he even says, think of it this way. The climate could change dramatically and we could still save koalas. Conversely, the climate could change only modestly and koalas could still go extinct. How about fires in the U.S.? Man, I got to do this in 60 seconds. In 2017, scientists modeled 37 different regions and found humans may not only influence fire regimes, but their presence can actually override or swamp out the effects of climate. Of the 10 variables that influence fire, listen to this. Of the 10 variables, none were as significant as the anthropogenic variables, such as this is where I made my point earlier, building homes near, managing fires and wood fuel growth within forests. So the next time you hear, and you're going to hear it, you've seen it in editorials, our local paper spreads lies all the time. Oh, these wildfires are terrible. You see it on CNN. We got to do something because we're going to have more wildfires. The report from scientists, the Natural Hazards Cooperative Research Center in Australia, and all the groups that come together, they've even said, you know, none of the variables are as significant as building homes near these areas, managing fires, which we don't do a very good job of, and wood fuel growth within forests. So you have to stop the exaggeration, and that's basically the point of this piece. You're scaring people. Greta Thunberg's parents are allowing child abuse, and none of it, or at least very little of it, is even true.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.